Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Mr. Alan Watts, News and Farm Director for WKDZ Radio Station in Katy's, Kentucky. This week, we will discuss the importance of telling the story of agriculture. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How's David today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Still in the middle of calving and everything. So far, so good.
First calf heifers.
First calf heifers, yeah. Hopefully everything is due by the 19th. So hopefully we'll be done before the 19th. And that's the good thing about AI. You've got a short window to check on things, and then you're done. So that 4 o'clock morning, every day morning getting up is going to be short-lived.
For our non-livestock-oriented listeners, those first calf heifers require quite a bit more attention. Personal attention than what our older bred cows do.
Yep. And we're fixed up really good. We've got a good place to have them and inside and all that kind of jazz. But, you know, it's better than being out in a 40-acre field, I promise.
I remember when you were building that barn and thinking how nice that is, not just from your operation, but any of the producers that I've worked with along the years, when the ones that have had nice facilities to work with typically have a more enjoyable experience overall.
It is absolutely much more enjoyable.
Everybody's happier.
Yeah. Vicki, you know, she just kind of rides our coattails as far as livestock goes and understanding all that kind of stuff. But I promise you, Vicki, it's a lot better.
Well, yes, it's easily explained that when you have a nice dry roof over your head, especially on days like today and tomorrow when we're expecting a little rain. So she does know what it's like to expect a little rain, though.
Oh, I guarantee it. She'll probably never live that down, because all of last summer, and Alan's probably heard me talk about this, but all of last summer, Vicki, every time it rained up there.
And when we didn't have,
when we didn't have any rain, she was getting rain the whole time. The beans looked good, the corn looked good, and it was brown as a biscuit down here and just as green as it could be up there. And I can't really explain it, but
did you get hate mail from the listeners?
I mean, they gave me a pretty hard time this summer, I tell you.
I bet.
Yeah. She won't live it down ever.
That's fine.
We were jealous. We just wanted some of what she has.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I bet so, for sure. So
guest with us today is Mr. Alan Watts. Alan is the News and Farm Director for WKDZ radio station in Katy's, Kentucky. And, you know, I'll go well past that. Alan's a friend. He's been a friend to David and I both for a lot of years, and a classmate of mine. Alan and I actually graduated high school together from Christian County back in 1986.
That's the best class ever, wasn't it, 1986?
I don't know. Are they still coming out of there? I don't know.
I think so, yeah. There's a doctor, and I'm sure there's a lawyer probably out there. Then Jay went up in extension. I went up in radio. But if that's where we are, but Dr. Mike Clark, he was one of
that's
our
right.
good friends over the years, and looks at all the x-rays for us now.
I can think of a few doctors that come out of
that class. Yes, exactly right. So, very smart people.
We were right there among them.
We were. That's right, Jay. I mean, what more could you ask for, right?
Alan and I probably both knew the path to the principal's office better than some of those people.
I once got called up there one time to Ms. Zona Henderson. Of course, Mr. Cecil Henderson was our ag teacher in Christian County, and just a great guy. Loved Mr. Henderson. Had ties. He wore these ties. You remember his ties, Jay?
Absolutely.
I mean, he must have used a can of starch on every tie when he pressed them. Because if he bent over, his tie would stay straight.
Really?
Never fail. I mean, the tie would never bend. It was just, it's like he must have starched the dickens out of that thing. but just a great guy, and I once did an impression of him. We were at FFA camp one year, and because, you know, you get in trouble at FFA camp. All the guys are like, hey, do your Mr. Henderson impression. So he would rock back and forth on his feet when he did the advisor's part. So I guess that was my future in radio, doing stupid stuff. But so I do that impression, and looked over in the other room, and he's like, Mr. Henderson's over there. And he's like, good job, Watts, good job. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to crawl into something here. I had no idea he was in the room.
Yeah.
Everybody else thought it was fairly funny, though.
One of my favorite stories about Miss Henderson,
his
wife, she was one of our assistant principals.
Right.
We had a principal and two assistant principals. Yeah. She was one of them. had a substitute teacher one time, and like a lot of students, I probably wasn't on my best behavior with the substitute, and she decides real quick she's going to make an example of me and march me to the office. We had that little window where you could look in, and then there was the hallway, and Miss Henderson's door was the first one in that hallway.
I remember that very well.
Well, it's the beginning of the school year, and this teacher is standing in the window trying to explain her issue to Miss Henderson. Mm-hmm. Well, I just stepped aside and walked in her office, and she looked up and saw me, and she said, "Oh, Jay, come here. I haven't seen you all summer." She gets up, gives me a big hug, and pats me on the back, and I just looked over her shoulder at that teacher and smiled.
You wasn't sarcastic at all, were you?
No. So my experience in her office, well, I got called in there, and there a bunch of kids skipped class one day, so I got called in there, and she said, "Alan, I taught your mama in school. I will call your mama. Are you lying to me where you were?" I mean, "Miss Henderson, you can call her. In fact, I'll dial the number for you because she knows where I was, and I was where I'm supposed to be." "Okay, well, but I'll call her. If I need to, I'll call her." And I'm like, "You don't have to. Mama will tell you exactly where I was."
Yeah.
I had a similar experience with Mr. Wilton Gant, who was the other assistant principal at the time. Years after he retired, he became a crop insurance adjuster.
Mm-hmm. And oh, really? I didn't know that.
When I came back to Christian County to work, he come popping in my office one day and had a plaid shirt on and, you know, blue jeans and a ball cap. And he starts talking to me like I should know him. And I didn't recognize him. You know, completely different attire.
Don't you love those, right?
He didn't have his pipe and didn't have his suit and tie on. And he said, "You don't recognize me, do you?" And I said, "No, sir." I said, "I don't think I do." And he said, "Well, I bet if you were bent over your desk and I had a paddle in my hand, you would remember me."
Oh, good
Mr.
time.
Mr. Gant.
Good time, Mr. Gant, yeah. There was a reason they didn't give us our diplomas until after we graduated. Walked across the stage, wasn't it?
That's exactly right. We had to go to the cafeteria
and get them. Yeah, they were in an envelope. And we were warned by Mr. Gant all through our practice ceremonies that if you misbehave, you will not get your diploma in the cafeteria after the graduation.
That's exactly right.
But Jay and I both got ours, so that's good news.
Well, that's good. I'm starting to wonder. We've really been starting to wonder all these stories.
If we'd have had cell phones back in our day,
I know it.
We'd all been in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah,
these young people today don't realize.
If my wife is listening to this, she's going to tell me, "Now, you know good and well, your diploma wasn't there when you got there. You had to go back to summer and get it." Which I did.
Yeah, correspondence courses are wonderful.
Oh my. Well, we've had a lot of fun through the years, and to be able to come back and work together in a professional setting has been it's been a joy. We've been able to do a lot of things together. Get to be a part of your radio show. David gets to be a part of your radio show, and a couple of times, Vicky has too.
That's right. Made my debut a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and then you were on last week.
And I was on last week.
Right. So
that's fantastic.
Alan, for all our listeners that aren't associated with you, won't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your position at WKDZ?
How far you want me to go back, Jay? I can tell a lot of junk.
We started pretty early, didn't we?
Well, back when we were in high school, I worked with Dean Kimmery in Hopkinsville, WHOP, and it was back in that day and time, it was a neat opportunity. Dink was a radio legend at WHOP in Hopkinsville for many years, new farm director there, and legendary farm director, member of the Farm Broadcasters Association. And when I grew up, it was a neat opportunity to get to be interviewed by Dink, because he would be at the Western Kentucky State Fair. He'd do his program there live every day. And so I just always got the bug of radio back in that day and time, back in the 1980s. And so I got the sense to do a little work with Dink over the years after that. And I'd just go hold his microphone or just hand him his microphone. Whatever Dink needed, I would do that. Mm-hmm. Hang out with him on the morning show. He and Jim Love did an early bird show every day. And I'd go in there. Never forget seeing Jim Love the first time in a sock hat. And I thought, people on the radio, you hear them and you think, well, I know what they're going to look like.
Yeah.
Didn't look anything like what I thought they would. And Dink always told the thing about it. He hit a hairpiece. And he said he lost it one time on an airplane. That was quite a funny experience flying somewhere on an airplane. But so I got my start there and worked part-time at WHOP when I was in high school, went to college at Western Kentucky University, still worked part-time there after community college and after graduating Christian County. And I went to work full-time there for about a year and a half or so after I got out of college at Western. And probably the only guy at Western Kentucky University, Jay, that had a major in communications, mass communications, minor in animal science. Loved animal science. Dr. Gordon Jones, one of my favorite teachers. I just had him on my statewide program just a couple of weeks ago or so, mm-hmm. just recently. But a great, great friend for many years, and still thank the world to Dr. Gordon Jones. But yeah, he got a lot of good stories there, too, over the years, but for another time. But anyway, just so I came back, worked in the insurance business a short time, realized I didn't need to be there. I need to be back in radio. So I had a chance to go to WKDZ in 1993. Started there answering telephones and doing weekend news. Mm-hmm. And then finally moved up to weekday news, learned a great deal from a man in broadcasting who will be a great friend, passed away a few years ago with cancer, but DJ Everett, a great friend of mine and mm-hmm. great mentor of mine as well. Mm-hmm. Dink was a great mentor. Then Willie Wilson, who is a legendary on WKDZ, mm-hmm. he put the station on the air in 1966, a year before I was born. Mm-hmm. And you're about my age, Jay, so I know about what – but so I think pretty neat. I worked at WHOP and WKDZ now 30 years. So I've worked there longer, over more than half the time it's been on the air, which is kind of a neat experience.
Well, that is. That's neat.
And so I did news and became the news director, and really a station grew over the years. We went from a 3,000-watt station to a 25,000-watt station, really expanded our coverage to Christian County and Caldwell County, and we get out to Todd County and really get across the lakes into Marshall and Callaway County some as well, down to Stewart County, Tennessee. So we really expanded our coverage over the years, and as we did that, was nominated for, I think, Trick Game Farm Bureau, David. Maybe mm-hmm. you guys nominated me back, mm-hmm. Trick Game Farm Bureau in 2007 for the Communications mm-hmm. Award with Farm mm-hmm. Bureau. Mm-hmm. So went and got that. Mike Feldhaus was there at the time, and great friend over the years Mike was. And so I got that award from Mike and came back home, and we got to talking, thought, you know, we're not really doing anything on the radio between 5 and 6 a.m. First conversation I had with my wife, I said, what do you think about me getting up an hour early? Well, are you sure? I'm like, yes. And so we came back. First guest on the radio, David, was very much an encouragement for me. David was my first regular guest on the WKDZ Morning Ag Report back in 2008 when we started out. So we grew the show. Jay quickly became a guest on the show. And now Matt Futrell in Christian County has took your Wednesday slot where you were. Graham Cofield's now on Tuesday where from Trigg County. And now Jay's on Monday. Jay mm-hmm. starts every week off on Monday. And we finish the week out with former Secretary of Agriculture, John Block, who is I met him a few years ago at the Farm Broadcasters, being a member of the Farm Broadcasters. And I rode the elevator down. And you know, that's my claim to fame. I ride the elevator with a lot of famous people. And so I rode the elevator down with him, and I recognized him instantly. You know, that voice, John Block has a voice that you just recognize. Mm-hmm. You can be in a room and hear him, and you know it's Secretary John Block. And, of course, Secretary under Reagan, for folks who may not remember your political history, but just an interesting fellow, farmer from Illinois, still farms in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And so rode the elevator down with him, and I asked him after he got the elevator, I said, Secretary Block, could I have an interview? He said, son, do you carry my radio program? I said, no, but I'd be happy to. He said, good deal. We'll do a radio interview then. So we've carried his program ever since then. So yeah. I figured I did an interview to get the program. But anyway, we did that and came back and really built that program over the years and really started off and really didn't know what to expect. Quickly after David came on with me, Ben Westerfield from Hopkins Elevator called and he said, would you like a grain market report? I said, I'd love to have a grain market report. I said, I know grain markets, but I said, I don't know them like you do because that's what you trade every day. Mm-hmm. So Ben came on, became our regular grain market report. He still does that today, and I'll tell you how that's progressed over the years. But he's become a good friend as well, knows grain markets very well through Hopkins Elevator, and he's the grain manager there for Hopkins Elevator now. And so that kind of progressed. We've just built the show over the years. It just really... We, you know, of course, in this business, you have to have advertisers, and people just responded tremendously to the show, and which was more than we ever expected. But, you know, we did it for one reason, really. I wanted to serve agriculture. I grew up listening to Dink Embry talk about agriculture and farming on his Early Bird show, and I thought we need to have a voice to help inform people about agriculture. Well, interesting enough, you start having conversations with people out in the community, and they're like, well, you know, I listen every morning. I don't farm, but I listen. Or I grew up on a dairy farm in Georgia. I grew up on a cattle farm somewhere. I grew up on a row crop farm. I don't farm, but I enjoy hearing it. I like to hear about what the grain markets are doing. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So I realized real quickly that in today's time, this was back in 2008 or so, in 2009, you realize real quickly that there's a public out there who doesn't know a lot about agriculture. And as we see this day and time, more and more people are removed from agriculture. Jay and Vicki, and you guys see that in your operations.
Absolutely.
Every time. You have two to three generations removed from agriculture today. But at that time, you realize that, hey, there are people here. This is a way to educate people about agriculture and the job our farmers do. And so we took it to a new level, and I think, you know, we began to do, when you guys were on the radio with me, we talked a little bit about, you know, what does the grain market mean? What does it mean when you're having futures out there? What does it mean when you're doing this or doing that? So it really developed over the years into a neat opportunity to share the message of agriculture and let folks know when they're driving down the road that tobacco scaffold wagon or Vicki, that big load of grain, load of corn that's on that tractor in front of them or the combine, and they get irritated or thinking, is that thing ever going to get in my way?
Right.
Maybe we can educate them and really help them realize that that load of corn in front of them helps put money back in their pocket. And that's so important to stay in time. And farmers are the world's worst about telling their own story.
Yep.
They don't do a great job of telling their story, because most farmers, they're not in there because they like to talk. They're there because they like to be on the farm. They like to do what they like to do.
Mm-hmm.
I always told Ben Cundiff, who was a farmer in Trigg County for years, I asked Ben, I said, you know, hit all this equipment. I'm like, Ben, do you ever drive the equipment? He said, they don't ever let me on the equipment. He said, they don't trust me on the equipment. I'm like, well, man, if I owned a $500,000 combine, mm-hmm. I'd be driving that sucker, because that's the fun part of doing it, you know.
Yep.
Nobody's ever offered to let me drive a combine yet. I guess they're afraid I'll run into a sinkhole or something. I don't know if they drive themselves today, but yeah.
Yeah.
And so interesting, and so it's really progressed to that point, and then just really, really love telling the story of agriculture, and we can talk a little bit about where it's progressed to this point. Now, you guys may have questions. I don't want to dominate the microphone. You guys got to remember, that's what I do for a living, okay? I talk every day for a living on the radio, four hours a day.
And that's why you're here, I mean, today with us.
Yeah.
The idea behind telling the story of agriculture, David and I, as your regular guests each week, mm-hmm. get to be a part of that.
Yep.
You know, for us, it's more than just that opportunity to tell what we're doing in our jobs.
Right, yeah.
It's more than just that opportunity to advertise a program. We get a chance to be a part of telling that mm-hmm. story. We're in the education. Dave and Vicki and I, all three, are in the education business. And to be able to have a radio station that gives us a platform to help us do our jobs is
much appreciated.
Very much appreciated. It's an immense opportunity for us to have that. And, you know, I do other radio stations as well, and I'm just as appreciative of them.
Right.
But we've been with you a long time and been doing it a long time, and if I don't ever say it again, I'll tell you thanks now that we've appreciated that opportunity.
And you guys have been a great success, and Vicki, it's great to have you on with David from time to time as well. And
I enjoy it.
I love the idea. When you guys came to me last year and asked me for some advice about the Kentucky Ag Matters podcast, I thought, what a great opportunity for you guys to share the story of agriculture in a brand new way, a different way, and, you know, and it's really been successful for you. I think you guys have interviewed a lot of folks, and
absolutely.
It's so important. The more people telling the agriculture story, the better off we are, really.
We may even focus on that more in the future. We talked when we met with Dr. Laura Stevenson, our extension director.
Right.
We talked about, we had her tell her agriculture story, and maybe that's something we need to do a little more often with some of our guests.
Yeah,
get them to tell their story of agriculture.
Yeah. I've said this several times, and I try to do it in front of groups that are removed from agriculture, especially if you can get in front of some school groups or particularly high school. But I always say that everybody that's living and breathing is connected to agriculture some way, somehow.
Yeah.
And I always try to explain it. You know, some are directly related. When I say directly, I mean your income source is from agriculture, from farming.
Sure, right.
That's your living. That's how, you know. But every one of us, whether we're producing anything or not, we are touched by agriculture because of the food we eat, the clothes that we wear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just we are all in this together.
Mm.
And the disconnect there is we don't tell our story.
Right. That's
agriculture very does not tell our story to connect the dots for those folks that aren't on the farms, that don't understand that. They don't know how they're connected to agriculture. And kids don't know where their food comes from.
Right.
And I think being able to tell our story through your very successful radio show and interviewing folks and then just getting that word out there,
mm-hmm.
I think that's just part of what we need to do as agriculturalists is to tell our story and share our story, because we don't do a good job of that. Like you said, farmers are not the ones that want to be out there. They're not looking for that pat on the back. They're not looking for that. That's not why they're in farming. Yeah.
And maybe that's our mission through this, and you guys do the same thing I do in that respect that, you know, I started doing for a long time, and we've really go to the next chapter here from where we started with the Morning Ag Report to where we are today. We started 2.5 years ago, and it'd be 3 in March. I don't know if we were crazy or nutty or just lucky, one or the other, but I always had a dream to have an ag network across the state of Kentucky. And I thought, you know, there were some out there, but then, and friend Jeff Nally, who's a fellow farm broadcaster, he touches some parts of mm-hmm. Kentucky with his program, but I've always wanted something across all of Kentucky. And so in order to, I did a program for Kentucky Farm Bureau for a couple of years. Mike Feldhaus, when he retired the last mm-hmm. time, Mike retired a couple of times. When he retired the last time, I kind of took over a program he had done for a long time for Farm Bureau called Across Kentucky. Did for a couple, 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. Farm Bureau decided they wanted to do something a little different with the program, got a shorter format, and I took over a program. I started a new program called The Farmer's Voice, which just really is an opportunity to share that story. And I'll share a little bit more about that. But back to the network, we were able to, the day COVID shut everything down, we had already made our plan to launch the Ag Network that day. So are we nuts? I don't know. Maybe we are. But we launched it, and we came up with a new show called Traveling the Bluegrass. And it was a kind of a name that our leadership team at the radio station devised. And we launched the Your Ag Edge Network that day. And we were initially on 30-some-odd radio stations. Now that show runs on 85 radio stations, plays 100 times a day, which just blows my mind. It just amazes me. But it's simply built on the fact that I love sharing agriculture stories, whether it be the story of a Dr. Gordon Jones, who taught agriculture and animal science at Western Kentucky University for 40 years. And still very involved. He has they sell cattle sales.
A bunch of cattle.
He's on the Kentucky Ag Development Board. But really, just to find his passion for agriculture, or to tell the story of a farmer from Christian County or a farmer from Webster County who, that's all they've done all their lives. And Farmer's Voice podcast has given me an opportunity. When I took that program on for Farm Bureau, we were able to use that through my travel and bluegrass programs as well. And so just love to share that story. From the traveling story, we built a ag network. We do grain market every day. Ben Westerfield has gone on to become a partner on the grain market as well. He does our grain market report with partnership with me every day. So we give the markets from Chicago Board of Trade, Hopkins Elevator. It runs every morning and goes out to about 30 radio stations across Kentucky. And we didn't build it out for every radio station, just on select radio stations all the way from Bardstown and all the way to West Kentucky, WYMC in Mayfield. So it's really grown there. Livestock Market Report, we do that every day. David Powell, who's been a longtime friend, weather guy, does our ag weather forecast for us every day. And then we added a couple of sports programs. Tom Leach does a program twice a week, and it's a program that he was about to give up because he really didn't have anybody to distribute it for him. And Beth Mann, my boss and president of the company, she said, "Tom, we'd love to take that on." And so he quickly became a partner with us on that. Larry Vaught, who's written University of Kentucky Sports for years, a longtime sports writer there, he does a program on there too. But so back to the Farmer's Voice podcast. This has given me the opportunity to share the story of the farmer, and it's so neat because, you know, I love to interview farmers, and I think we were talking before we started out. You can start a conversation with a farmer, and you guys have interviewed him here on the program too. And you start a conversation with the farmer, and it's like, "Tell me a little bit about your farm." "Well, I raise beef cattle." "Well, what kind of cattle do you raise?" "Tell me about your, tell me about your cattle operation." "Well, I've got 100 head Angus cattle." And before you know it, he's told you they come from their lineage dating back to some, you know, farm in North Carolina and where they mm-hmm. come from, and then the history of the farm. How many generations have farmed that farm? You know, that's pretty impressive. You've got guys out there in Kentucky and ladies who have 6-7 generations of agriculture have touched that farm, and they're wanting to pass it on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. It's so important. And then talk a little bit about their community involvement. You know, every farmers just don't farm. They are very involved in the community. They're on the school board. They're on the Farm Bureau board. They're on other organizations. Mm-hmm. And they make the community's turn where they're a part of. But a lot of times people don't realize how active and involved those guys are. And the last two questions I ask every farmer, and the last one's probably the most important, but obviously this day and time, next to last question, what challenges do you have on a farm? naming some of your challenges. Because obviously, the big thing right now, labor, number one, that's always a big one. Fuel cost, input cost, huge, huge things that folks talk about. But that's not everywhere. I've interviewed folks from Kenton County, our folks up around Louisville, right outside of Louisville, you know, Oldham County, places like that. That's not their big concern. Their big concern is losing farmland. Talk about Bullitt County, one in particular. Yeah. Losing farmland to Louisville, which is continuing to grow, and people are looking for housing development. I mean, do you keep this farm and rent it for what you're renting it for, an acre, or are they going to sell it for $4 or $5 million for an acre to build something? I mean, they're losing land like crazy. Farmers up around Louisville, Lexington, and Cincinnati are worried about having land to farm because it's going by the wayside.
Yeah.
And the last question, and probably my favorite question to ask, and it always, you never know what you're going to hear, but say, what do you love about farming? I could ask you the same question around the table here. What do you love about farming? So all you guys are involved in farming. And when you ask that question, they'll pause for a second, and then they'll tell you, I love to see calves born in the morning time. Mm-hmm. Or I love to see that crop come up out of the ground every year. I love to take that crop to the market and see what I can sell it for. And I think, you know, that just it touches you. It makes you almost bring tears to your eyes when you hear them, because before you know it, that farmer who didn't really want to tell you a lot about his farm in the beginning, he's invited you to dinner at his house, or invited you to stop by the farm sometime if you're ever in Cumberland County. Stop by and see me, and you know a lot about that farmer, and you really know why that farmer gets up and does what he does. And if I enjoy hearing that, our listeners, people need to hear that. People need to know why a farmer in Webster County, Vicki, gets up and does what he does every day. Yep. He could go work at a factory and make, you know, have a lot more stable income, but he loves to get up and do what he does every day. Mm-hmm. And that's the important story you share. It's the cattle and what they raise and what they do is important, but their passion for agriculture and farming and the challenges they face, that helps people. That's really where you share, and that's really the thing I love to share about farmers and agriculture.
And farmers and They don't retire. They retire on paper.
Yeah.
But it's truly a way of life, and I think that's one thing that we can all say, whether we farm, you know, David, you have your farm and your cattle operation, and, you know, Jay, you have a farm, and I come from a farm,
and I grew up on a farm.
You grew up on a farm. We know it. It's a way of life. We know that. But, again, not everybody knows that, but they don't. They never really quit farming until they can't.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's because of the love that they have for it. That's all they know. And and not only that, it's they understand though the importance of agriculture, not just because of the income that they're making, but they know the impact that it has. And the importance, and they're environmentalists. I mean, they get picked on.
Big time,
and agriculture gets picked on all the time for environmental issues. But quite honestly, they're probably the most environmental folks there are out there, because that's the base of what they do. I mean, it's that they know how important the soils are to us. They know how important those things are. But you know, again, it's just being able to get that story out.
Alan, I know we're talking today about the story of agriculture and how to tell that. Talk with us a little bit, you know, when we talk about getting out and telling the story and all that kind of stuff, and farmers, you know, and I know they don't like to be interviewed. is really not the right word necessarily, but give us some tips, some pointers for farmers that may want to do a little better job of telling their story. What are some things that they can do when they're being interviewed?
You know, David, I've interviewed a lot of people in my career. 30 years I'll celebrate in August of this year, and long time to be doing the same thing, and I want to do it several more years.
Sure.
My daughters asked me, she said, "Hey, when are you going to retire?" And I'm like, "Do you want to take my job or what?" But anyway, you know, to interview, and I look at every interview not as an interview at all. It's more of a conversation. I don't want to interview you. If I'm interviewing you, I'm interviewing you for a job, and you don't need a job. You're a farmer. You've got your income. I want to have a conversation with you about what you do and about what you do and what you know. And so really, I think you have to look at it first and foremost. Don't be nervous. It's not something to be nervous about.
Yep.
It's really just a conversation. I mean, just like we're having today, that's what makes things like this you never know where you're going to go with a conversation.
Yep.
And it's just friends, you know, before you know it, you become a friend, if you're not a friend already, but we're all friends around the table here, but you become a friend, and your real conversation is just really sharing a little bit about you and what you're. So when I ask you a question about what do you like to farm, tell me why you love to farm. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to hear. That's what people want to hear. People want to hear what makes you real. You know, Carl Chaney, favorite example, we did an agritourism series the last couple of years with Tourism Arts and Heritage Cabinet through Traveling the Bluegrass, and we visited Carl Chaney, Chaney's Dairy Farm in Bowling Green. People may have been there, may have not. If you go there, you got to see Carl. And Carl loves to talk to people. But to find out the story, why they started that, he was milking one cow a day. His father milked one cow a day. Jay, you ever heard the story?
Uh-huh.
Father milked one cow a day. And so he realized that if I'm going to keep this family farm for my kids and grandkids someday, we got to do something a little different here. So they start making ice cream. And so from there, they've turned into just a huge demand for ice cream. They can't keep it. I mean, they sell so much ice cream. And during the pandemic, during the COVID-19 pandemic, he said they went to grocery stores they were bottling their own milk. And he said, we had people taking it from us before we could put it on the shelves to go buy it because they were so worried and wanted a homegrown product from somebody that they knew where it came from. And that's farmers, you know, we can buy things like that everywhere, but when you're talking about meat or anything like that, mm-hmm. That's the story you need to share with folks. So I think that's probably the best. Just be real and look at it as a conversation.
Yeah, I think, you know, and a lot of times we look at interviews and everybody gets to sweat.
Oh, yeah, they do, right.
You know, and when you talk, especially to folks that may not do this on a regular basis, and you go, well, I like to interview you or talk to you and tape it for the radio or whatever, and they're pretty hesitant and everything. But, you know, obviously, you know, Alan, just like, and this is something I've learned from you, is just to have a conversation.
Right.
And as farmers, I guess the tip that I can give them is look at it like a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, and be truthful and invite folks. As people involved in agriculture, we need to invite folks to our farm. And, you know, and if they don't know how something works, say, hey, why don't you come on out to the farm? I'll show you around. I'll show you my operation, you know, and that kind of stuff. Because chocolate milk does not come from a chocolate cow.
No, it doesn't.
And, you know, we need to do a better job of, I mean, and I feel like we're doing a pretty good job of getting the story out.
Yes, that's important.
We've got lots of work to do because we're getting further and further and further away from the farm the folks are. And we've got to be able to tell our story and about how we produce their you know, food is not grown at the grocery. I don't know if a lot of people know that or not, but when you roll up at the grocery, there's not a big field behind there where all that food is grown and everything. So we need to do a better job of getting that word out about agriculture.
You know, we can have a lot of supporters of agriculture of that farm life who don't necessarily come from a farm background. And we're only going to get that by telling our story.
That's true. Yep, very true. So important to do that. And, you know, I never go into an interview with a script. I don't want a scripted interview.
Yep.
I never go in with a set of questions. And I know you guys probably have learned as you've done this podcast, the conversations, are the ones that you just don't expect to come out. You learn so many things through those. Mm-hmm. And so whether I'm interviewing Senator McConnell or Senator Rand Paul or Congressman James Comer, anybody like that, Governor Beshear, whoever it may be, I never go in with a set of questions. I may have an idea of what I want to talk about. And a lot of times they know what they want to talk about, and you kind of work that. But I like to listen to what they say. You know, if I'm interviewing Vicki, I want to hear what you have to say, Vicki. And a lot of times you may say something that spurs a question on my part, and we'll have a conversation about it. And maybe not what you planned on. Jay Stone, Jay was on with me right after New Year's, and Jay had put on the Facebook the day before Iron Skillets, his Iron Skillet collection. So we spent, 5 or 6 minutes talking about Iron Skillets, Jay?
Sure.
And that's going to be a traveling program one of these days.
We need to do that.
But I think, you know, people are fascinated with things like that. And people, it's the stories like that that people enjoy because those are the things that, you know, you don't hear that everywhere. You can turn a podcast on, hear the news, and hear what's going on today, all the negativity and things like that out there. But the stories like that, everybody can identify with that. Everybody can identify with the farmer who gets up in the morning time and goes out and sees that baby calf in the barn, David, or Vicki sees that corn first come up out of the ground, and it's like, you know, it's going to work for another year.
That's right.
And they get to the end of the year and they think, whew, I gambled this year. And Firkwind always said probably the farmers are some of the biggest gamblers out there, because you plant a crop every year and hope it's going to turn out, hope you're going to have good weather, hope you're going to have a good yield, and hope you can sell it for a good price at the end of the year and pay your bills.
I was asked to speak at a ag appreciation breakfast a couple of years ago, and one of the things that I said was, you know, that farmers wear a lot of hats, and they do. They're more than just a farmer, but I said they're an optimist.
Oh yeah,
because you cannot farm and not be an optimist because you're rolling the dice every single day.
Yep.
And you are an optimist, even if they think they're not.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and Las Vegas doesn't have anything on farming. I mean, as far as gambling goes, it's probably as addictive and as it could be worse than gambling. Right. I don't know.
And farmers are well connected. People may think, well, that farmer, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't refer to an insurance agent. I worked with a guy, when I was in the brief insurance business, I was with Farm Bureau and worked with this guy in Bowling Green. He told me a story about a guy. He said, you know, you never judge a book by its cover. He said, I learned a lesson the hard way. He said, I went out to this farmer in Monroe County, was selling an insurance policy. He said, guy sitting back on his front porch and had this bib overalls on, and he said, I thought, this old man can't afford anything. I'm going to show him the cheapest thing I got. He said, so I showed him the cheapest insurance policy I got, said, and the man said, I'll take it. Reached in the top pocket of bib overalls, pulled out a wad of $100 bills and paid me for a year premium. He said, I kicked myself in the rear end all the way back to Bowling Green. Because he said, I should have shown that man a little something better. I just assumed he couldn't afford it. But, you know, it's just – and farmers are so well connected, because just recently at the cattlemen's meeting, you know, what a heritage there. 50 years that organization celebrating this year. And so somebody asked, Dave Maples, I think, the director, asked, was anybody here when the organization, or maybe Kerry King, who's the president, just retiring president, anybody here when it first was formed? Four or five farmers stood up in the room, and that they had been there 50 years. They've been there the first day they ever met. And farmers are very engaged. They're very politically engaged. I had an agriculture commissioner for them. Interesting questions come out. One gentleman asked, he said, I want to know, are you in favor of fake meat? And all three of them. So two of them answered. Two of them said, oh, no, we're not in favor of it. Third one kind of, he told him, he said, and I don't want to hear a beat around the bush answer. He said, I want to hear a yes or no and why. And so the third one answered and didn't really answer his question. He said, didn't have the microphone anymore. Before they could get another question, he said, you didn't answer my question. I want to know, are you in favor or are you not? And he made sure that, but he's very engaged in that, in the world of politics and the world of what's going on out there today and the issues we're facing in our agriculture industry.
Yeah. Well, you know, that kind of brings me to a point, Alan, that I wanted to, and we all want to congratulate you on your award that you received at the Farm Bureau Convention, the Communications Award.
Thank
you. Statewide award that Bullitt County actually nominated you for, and you know, that to me, that speaks volumes of how far you're getting out, and the word that's coming out, and the story that you're telling about agriculture, and it's starting to touch a lot of other people besides just the local people. It's touching a lot of other people too. So from all of us, you know, absolutely, congratulations.
Thank you, and it's a true honor to do what I do every day, and I actually get paid for it too. That's I think about it, but I think I might do it for free. My wife might have something different to say about that. But you know, it's neat, and I know you guys do the same thing in what you do, serving farmers and working for agriculture. I'm also the news director; have been that for well over 25 years at the radio station. Hosted the WKDZ Country Club for most of that time as well. So I'm on the air 4 hours a day. But one of my favorite things to do is the Morning Ag Report, and I hate to – and I have a great co-host that's been on the Country Club with me for years, Cindy Allen, who is just like my best friend, my boss at the radio station, Beth Mann, who's the owner. We all have grown up together. We've been there working almost 30 years together, so we've kind of seen each other grow from where we had three employees to around 40 employees now.
Yeah.
So it's really changed a lot over the years, but, you know, you just love what you do. I love what I do every day, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. Sometimes I think one of these days I guess I'll retire, but I don't want to retire anytime soon. I'm still having fun, and that's what, you know, that's what it's all about. If we're having fun in life, you got to do what you got to do.
Why
do anything different? Now, hopefully, my daughter one of these days may come in and want to do, and if she wants to do it, I think she has a great opportunity to do that. But you know, visiting farmers and being on the road, and I've traveled a lot. Traveling the bluegrass has really taken me with our agritourism edition series. We traveled to 8 different places last year, from Buffalo Trace in Frankfort, which is a unique story in itself, to in Kentucky Artisan Center in Berea, all the way to Kentucky Dam Village, where they grow part of their own food to serve in the restaurant there. I mean, just some deep places. Prestonsburg. I'd never been to Eastern Kentucky until 2021. And what a neat experience. Prestonsburg, I've never been to, and the people are wonderful. You know, Kentuckians are wonderful wherever you go. Mm-hmm. And the agriculture there is much different than it is in West Kentucky, where I'm from. In fact, we remarked as we drove back on the Saturday coming back from Prestonsburg, we finally got to Central Kentucky and we saw soybeans for the first time in 3 days. And it's like, my wife's like, well, that's a flat field for changing. But we went to the... you tell me when you got to stop, Jay. I don't want to keep
you us, just keep.
I don't want to keep us going too long, but I can tell. That's what I do for a living now. So we went and interviewed Trinity Shepherd. Trinity is now the park manager. Have you ever been elk hunting with Trinity?
I've not been elk hunting with him, but I'm familiar with Floyd County, and I know who you're talking about.
Oh my gosh, the elk in Floyd County are beautiful, and up on top on the mountaintops. And so we went there and asked Trinity. We interviewed Trinity, who can bugle like an elk. I mean, he was a naturalist at the time. Now he's a park manager at Jenny Wiley State Park. And so we asked him, after he'd done the bugling and saw the elk and the things like that, we went up to see the elk and the wild horses on the mountain, which they just wander just like they own the place. There was a factory there. They walked up on the front porch, just walking right down through the whole thing like they owned a place and just came out of nowhere. It's like, and the elk are just beautiful up there. But we ask him, and one of my favorite places, things to do if we go somewhere is, recommend me a local restaurant, like the Family Diner in Walton. We interviewed Eddie, and I can't remember Eddie's last name, but he's a dairyman up there right outside of Cincinnati. But the Family Diner, you walk in, everybody in the room looks at you like, because they know you're not from there. But what a great story of that place. And so we asked Trinity, I said, where's the place to eat here? And he said, well, you need to go eat at Cloud Nine Cafe. It's up on top of the mountain. You ever been there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's by the Big Sandy Regional Airport. And he said, they're famous for the $100 hamburger. And I'm like, $100 hamburger? There's got to be an interesting story there. So we interviewed the owner and interviewed. And what it is, people will fly to the Big Sandy Regional Airport. They'll fly there, get out of the plane, go eat lunch at the restaurant that's right beside the airport, and get back in and fly back home. So they call it the $100 hamburger because, it's not cheap to fly a private airplane these days.
Fuel prices nowadays, that might be the $200 hamburger.
Yeah. But, I mean, what great stories about people like that. And the owner's dad, he said, people come up to the top of the mountain because if you live down in Prestonsburg, all you see is mountains on both sides. All you do, you have to look up to see. He said they come up and sit on the front porch of the Cloud Nine Cafe and look at it and say, wow, look at the open sky. Because when you're down in the valley, you're not used to seeing that wide open sky. Mm-hmm. I remember you told a story. One of you guys told a story years ago, maybe you, David, said some farmers from East Kentucky came to West Kentucky and looked at the wide open fields and said they'd hurt themselves on a tractor out in the wide open fields because not sure how to do that, you know.
Yeah. It's a different ball game. So
anyway, those stories are what makes it neat. You know, what makes the business neat, and what makes agriculture and farming and sharing that agriculture story neat too, of all the things we have here in our state, and it's plenty to do here.
Yeah,
that's right. I'll just go ahead and offer it out loud. Anytime you need a tour guide through Central or Eastern Kentucky, you let me know. I'll just get in the car. I'll take you.
Yeah. Well, he can take you. I mean,
and you know, back roads are my favorite.
We can do that.
My father-in-law, before he passed away, used to give me a hard time. He said, Alan and those doggone long cuts of his, because I could take him somewhere, and I'd go the back roads. I love the back roads. I love to see things on the back roads. He's like, he told my wife, he said, I think it takes twice as long to get there because he drives all these back streets, and we go through every little neighborhood that he's ever been through. And I'm like, that's just the way I am. I love to, if I'm going to drive somewhere, you can drive the interstate all day long. But when you drive through the back roads, when you go through a Bloomfield, went to Bloomfield for my first time going to the cattlemen's meeting.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of a unique stop. And when you get older, you have to stop and go to the bathroom every now and then. And I don't mind telling that. It's not an embarrassment anymore. You got to do what you got to do. So we stopped and went through Bloomfield, which was a beautiful town. I'd never been there in my entire life. I've driven to Lexington for 30 years for livestock judging events and things like that. But I've never been to Bloomfield until just recently. And I'm going back. We're going back because that town's got a story, and love to share that story, and love to share the story of agriculture up that way, you know?
Yep. A lot of good little areas around there. I've got friends that I've hunted with for years, not far from Winfield, just right outside of there. So
I bet. So we wanted to avoid this little detour, so we decided, I thought, surely there's a way to get back to the Bluegrass Parkway without having to go the same way, because there was a detour that took about 15 minutes to get through, and I was ready to get to Lexington. Yeah. So we wound up going through back roads, and that was neat. We went down beside the river and the creek there, and we're in windy roads, and I'm like, what neat things to see about Kentucky and agriculture and farming, and saw a few interesting flags and all kinds of things out in the neighborhood.
take the back roads into Bardstown, that farthest east Bardstown exit, Highway 150, is where you come out probably.
Right. It's neat time, so.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Alan, one of the things we always do towards the end of our show is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip that's pertinent both to the season of the year and to the guests that we've had on at the time. And our timely tip for this week is do exactly what you do every day for a living, and that's encourage folks to tell their agriculture story. It's important to let those around you know the importance of agriculture and the value that agriculture has added to your life. You're out marketing agriculture if you're telling your story. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things we encourage folks to do, and we appreciate the fact that you do that and help us do it as well.
Oh, love it. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity to be on. It's a pleasure to be with you, and love what you guys are doing. Keep up the great work and keep sharing that ag story out there, guys.
We'll do that, and you have to promise in advance to come back and do this with us.
I'll do
again.
That. Yeah, I love that. I had a great time.
We just have to tell stories. Let Alan and Jay tell stories.
Yeah, we just sit back.
Hey, can we meet next time? Is it T's Diner and Dixon?
O-T's.
We need to meet at O-T's
Cafe.
Diner.
Yeah, that's right.
Or where's it? Cozy? Where's your?
Well, I was talking about Coe's Fish House there in Russell Springs.
We can make a long trip up there, too, Jay.
We can do that. I'll drive.
Yeah, I like
Jay
that.
They always drive.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, we want to thank Alan for being a big enjoyment with us this week, and we want to thank our host for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans again to join us next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.